You're listening to the Vocal Fry Podcast, your weekly dash of voice science, pedagogy, and pop culture. Coming to you from Waste Disposal Center 3 on the original Death Star.
Vocal Fam.
Hello.
Look at us. Now I feel like I'm hot. I'm not hot. I mean, like, my mic is hot.
That's possible. I couldn't say.
Well,
I can't see your levels.
It wasn't.
And now it is?
But now I guess it's just that I was talking louder.
That's possible.
All right, Vocal Fam. It's been a... See, then I go into my actual podcasting voice, and now I feel like I'm hot. But
again?
Whatever. Again.
Well, what are you going to do?
Well, it sounds like a personal issue to me.
It does.
Anyway, Sarah, how's your week been?
How has my week been?
We actually got like back-to-back episodes.
I know. Rare,
now
right?
You're
in
hot.
This season. We both have a tendency to shift how we speak, certainly.
Yeah, we just don't want to be peaking.
No, don't want that. My week was mildly, it was busy. I don't know if chaotic's the right word. It was definitely a busy week. We had the concert on Monday night.
What concert? Oh, we did.
We did. That was Monday night.
Oh my gosh, Vocal Fam. We had a concert Monday night. I had completely forgotten that.
Yeah. No, so had that. Did an audition.
Yeah, Sarah did an audition.
Woo. You know, and right now that feels like a busy week to me. Whereas I was like, oh yeah, this used to be just like normal every day. But that was before I was, you know, taking care of a tiny human and getting up in the night and all that fun stuff. But, you know, busy-ish week.
Yeah.
Here we are. It's spring break now.
Yeah.
Kicking off yours. How's your week? You also had a concert that you forgot about.
We did do a concert Monday night.
Yeah, Monday night. It does feel like a while ago.
That feels like longer ago than Monday.
You've moved on.
I moved on.
Well, I mean, you know, there's a few other things going on with Lyric Stage right now. What with also getting ready for the musical and...
I haven't had anything to do with that at all.
Oh, well, then maybe not for you, but...
I mean, I've done so little for that. I've never done less. Since I've been in charge of Lyric Stage, I've not done anything this little for a production.
That's kind of nice. I mean, you've been busy enough with other things that probably was necessary.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I made it an easy show on purpose.
Yeah, no, I think that was wise.
So, Sarah, let's cover a couple of different things today.
Let's do it.
First, I've been seeing a lot of posts again about... Let's talk about language for a second. I had just reposted on a forum post our episode from... I think it's 2021.
Okay.
Where we did an episode titled... Sorry, I'm fixing my glasses, Vocal Fam. Where we did an episode titled It's All Made Up Anyway.
Isn't it, though?
Well, I want to say we have always had an important philosophy on the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and we never, like, wrote these things down.
No.
But, like... One of the things, if you've ever listened to the show for a long time, that, you know, we've always been about destigmatizing voice health.
Yes.
That's a thing we've talked about for a long time.
Multiple.
And actually, I want to just give a shout out to John Henney, who had me on his show, Intelligent Vocalist,
mm-hmm.
Just this last month, recording about kind of my own journey through... my own singing and how we should not be technique shaming each other.
Yeah.
Because a voice health situation could arise for a billion different reasons.
Yes.
So that's why we try to destigmatize voice health.
Yes.
Because typically when voice things occur, right, it's usually not a singular cause. It could be a singular cause.
It could be,
cause.
But it's not... Always.
But it's often complex, right?
Sure.
Yeah, because voice is complex.
Sure.
So that's one thing we've always been on as a podcast. And another thing that we've always been on as a podcast is, well, we try to cite sources whenever we can, obviously.
When we can, yeah.
You know, so that's a thing we've always been into.
Giving credit where it's due.
But I think one of our big principles in talking about singing has always been that we don't want to ever let ourselves get caught up on terminology.
Yeah. Yes.
And obviously, if we're talking about like the cricothyroid, okay, well, that is an anatomical body part.
Yeah, we might get caught up on that if you start calling it your elbow.
okay, that is an anatomical structure, and we know what it is. At the same time, to refer to cricothyroid registration would be...
Sure, maybe that's where we...
Not
start...
Really well stated.
Yeah.
Because the cricothyroid is active during all sorts of phonational events.
In fact.
And really just aids us in raising pitch and rocking the thyroid cartilage and lengthening and, you know, thinning out the vocal folds.
Yes.
So we can, you know, but I'm more thinking of this in terms of what I often call in class any kind of, and this is what the episode that we had done previously was on, of any kind of like singer words.
Sure. I mean, we have so many.
You know, and obviously.
And they serve purposes.
Oh, of course. And language is all we have, right?
Yes.
I mean, you know, obviously we have physical sensation and we can talk about physical sensation. Mm-hmm. But as you and I know, just having worked together in a lesson situation, mm-hmm. our own somatosensory awareness, our own kinesthetic feedback, our own, you know, proprioception, they're different.
Yes.
Singer to singer, person to person, individual to individual.
Yes.
So even if we're talking about things we experience.
Well, and never mind too, like if you're working with, because I work with a lot of singers who haven't necessarily taken lessons before and are a little less experienced. Half the time, if I ask them what they experienced, they just go, I don't know.
Yeah. And if you said to your singer, well, if you could just support that more, that would mean literally nothing.
Nothing to them. Nothing.
Nothing. Even if you said, well, if you just keep it in the mix.
They don't know what that means until they, I mean, you don't know what you don't know.
You know, and it's so interesting to think about singing as a task that so often even the things that are important in singing,
mm-hmm.
and I think experiencing noises that allow you to go, ah, that kind of,
sure.
that kind of registrational event change that I just did.
Mm-hmm.
In the end, it actually is the kind of thing that you can only know what it's like once you've experienced doing the thing.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And so, like, so much of what I try to teach, I think, is actually, you know, figuring out ways to coax a human
into... Yes, I agree. Same. It's trying to guide them through an experience and have them recognize what it is. That's the other thing, is trying like to get them to be able to put words to something so that I'm not imposing my own experience on them.
And I remember the world that I grew up in voice back in the Stone Ages of the dinosaurs. Otherwise known as 2004.
Oh. Ah, fourth grade. What a crazy time.
No, just randomly using a date of 20 years ago.
Oh.
Yeah.
You know, I constantly forget that it's actually 2024.
Right. Just thinking about the fact that, like, I remember as an early researcher, like, just wanting to be like, oh, well, yes, but if it was chest-dominant production or head-dominant production, or if it was, what is nasality? I, like, wanted to know, like, I mean, look, that inspired my entire dissertation. Like, I was like, what is nasality?
Wow.
And now I've written
so
on
deep,
it.
So deep, so thought-provoking.
You know, but, like, But like, you know, with any of these, what is, how many times do we still see people want to know what mix is?
Oh my gosh. Yes. Where people come in, my favorite, I'll have people come in. They're like, I want to learn how to mix. And then they'll make a sound. And I'm like, do you know that was mix?
Yeah, they don't.
I'm like, you realize you're already mixing. Would you like to make some other sounds?
I have one client who had come from a lot of years of voice lessons,
mm-hmm.
and training,
mm-hmm.
and only thought that belting of any kind, whatever, however we want to use that word.
Okay.
Okay.
Sure.
Again, that's just using another word.
Just a word.
That could only be absolute, full, raw, unadulterated chest voice.
Yes. Sure.
You know, and so like having to like then,
I think that's what I thought before like actually taking pedagogy or reading or studying anything. Like I definitely undergrad Sarah thought that belting equaled just full on chest, and anybody who heard me attempt to belt in quotation marks in undergrad would have very much heard that.
And it's just so interesting with just and we can even go away from words that have anything to do with registration. It's just so often these words have to do with registration.
Yes.
You know, and obviously if you want to see a more thorough book report summary, if you look at Herbst's 3 snake pit articles.
Yeah.
You know, in Journal of Singing, and I guess that was 21, 22, something like that. 21 and 22, 2021 and 2022.
I just told you that I can't remember this 2024. I dates are hard.
And, you know, so if you want like to read a more thorough book report.
There it is.
With a lot of citations and a lot of.
It's very well done, obviously. Yep.
What have you on that topic, but it applies to like so many other things that we use randomly as, I mean, I just used one earlier and said support.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Or like the ring.
And, or
ping.
The ring, the ping. Yes. And it's so interesting. You know, that actually ties in with, so Vocal Fam, I'm, you know, I've got my graduate acoustics course this semester. And we've been, the first 7 weeks were listening and perception.
Mm-hmm.
Like I spent 7 weeks on noise understanding.
Sure. I mean, you could easily spend a semester on that.
And trying to give them a objectifiable framework,
mm-hmm.
from which to discuss how we describe noises.
Okay.
Rather than using
subjective okay.
terminology.
Sure.
But even in that, they all want to go, oh, so that's ping?
That's the ping.
Or that's squillo?
Sure, yeah.
Or that's...
You're like, those are adjectives. That's
singer's format.
Okay, yeah, sure.
And it's so interesting. We even use these words,
mm-hmm.
to try to represent things that in the literature are definable.
Mm-hmm.
Like singer's format cluster is a definable
term,
phenomenon.
Yes.
That you can cite in the literature. It is not some
nebulous thing you hear like, wow, what singer's format that person has. Like, fun fact, kind of all.
Well, singer's format as a definable phenomenon requires that the bandwidths are compressing upon each other and that they're overlapping, thereby creating visually in a averaged spectrogram,
mm-hmm.
what looks like a super format between 2.4 and 3.2 kilohertz.
Sure.
But there are all kind of voices that also produce energy in that range that I would not
call
singer's format cluster, because it's not clustered.
Yeah.
And it's not overlapping. Like in contemporary voices, we see energy there, but I would never
call
refer
it
to it as singer's format cluster.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Number of years ago, right before his wife got sick, Tom Cleveland and I were going to look at that in country singers.
Yes.
And then his wife got ill. We actually even took data on a couple of subjects. Important people whose names you can't know.
Oh, well, leave us hanging.
But you know, because, well, I mean, at Vanderbilt, he had access to Nashville.
Well, I was gonna say, you're kind of in the country music
capital of the world.
Yeah.
But, he wanted to see if they were, you know, doing anything like what the literature had talked about in like classical singing styles.
Because
let's be honest, we have more that was written on quote unquote formant tuning with classical tenor voices.
Yes.
Than anything else.
Yes.
Insert reasons why voice pedagogy history is sexist here.
Well, you said it.
Anyway, but I mean, just look, I mean, most of it was done by men who cared about men.
Men's voices.
Like, that's the history. It's changing. Sure. I'm just telling you what the history was. Yeah,
you also just have to keep in mind that, like, up until the last 100 years, I mean, what was the point of a woman going to any sort of higher education or anything? Like,
I mean, there was plenty of point. It just didn't happen me, like, as often.
That was the idea. That was the mentality. Oh, yes, was for sure. Why would 100 you even
years
bother?
Ago, 1924, yeah.
And people tend to research, like, we like to know about ourselves.
Yep. And this is why we need women's voices like yours in the room other women, so that when important discussions about what questions we should be asking are being asked,
we can say, hey, but what about?
Like people like you and Theodora and Kayla and all these other absolutely fantastic, brilliant.
Isn't today International Women's Day?
Is it really?
I think so. Or was it yesterday?
I don't even know what the date today is.
I'm not sure either. I just saw some Facebook posts. And you know, like sometimes those can come across like a day late or whatever.
If it is.
Let me double check that. Yes, it is today. International Women's Day.
Cool.
Crazy. Well, then, how timely.
Amazing.
And you did that. He didn't even know this, ladies and gentlemen.
I didn't even know what the date was today.
It's the 8th. No, now you know.
I just knew it was 2024.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I thought that was counting for something.
I knew we were in March.
Anyway, all this to say, Vocal Fam, we will continue as a podcast to not get caught up on what a word means as long as we can describe when we use a word. If we're using a word to describe a noise, I would like for us to be able to describe that using multiple means.
Okay.
To give the word and its definition a representation beyond, well, it's mix. And mix is not chest.
No.
But you see what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, so often, it's so easy to define a word.
And I think being able to, like you said, describe it in multiple ways is important, because then the whole point of words is to communicate. So that when you're talking to somebody, if they use a different word for what you're using this word for, as long as you can both come to the realization that you are describing the same thing.
Right.
And also, potentially more importantly, when you are talking with a student, as long as your student can understand what you mean and you're not just like, you know, throwing out big words. You're not a magician who's trying to like create illusions.
Well, and let's admit that from a pedagogic application perspective, useful fictions are real.
They are. Oh, yes.
Useful fiction is totally usable and reliable. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but let's even also admit, you know, as we, I had mentioned John's show earlier. He did a great episode this week about biotensegrity.
Okay.
And fascia. And had a great guest on talking about that. There's so much that we don't even know about the human body still. Like, it's one thing for us to say, well, it's the cricothyroid. Okay, well, fine. That is a body part. Nobody's arguing that. Mm-hmm. Unless the medical field wants to rename the cricothyroid.
In which case, we'll bring like, you for the ride.
But even the manner in which we talk about body parts evolves. Like, for example, 20 years ago, if you looked at the singer's format literature or the research on nasality, you would see a lot about the area epiglottic sphincter or area epiglottic muscle. And yet, you know, as Carrie Obert has shared with so many of us about how tiny and almost insignificant the area epiglottic muscle is, you know, so like even when we refer to, is it an anatomical structure? Yes. But does it do what we maybe thought it did?
Maybe not. We learn more. We get better technology. We can actually...
Yeah, and particularly regarding something that's a muscular event as complex as respiration and or phonation.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention an event that is in nature occurring, but that is as complex as talking about the air mass and the air movements and the vibrational movements of air in the resonating vocal tract, we're going to keep changing our... One of the things I said to Christian when he was on the podcast...
Yes.
In 2020.
Okay.
He said, we've been... Well, let's face it. We've been cleaning up Vandenberg's work for the last 60 years. I looked at my grad class this semester and I said, you will be cleaning up my work for the next 60 years. And they all kind of looked at me with like their jaws on the floor. And I'm like, I'm telling you.
It's always evolving.
Exactly.
Science. Like, we're never going to be like, this is it. This is the answer.
Well, and I think this is why I love the idea of evidence-based models compared to like using the idea of science-informed models.
Mm-hmm.
Because if science itself keeps adapting, that means we're talking about evidence.
Okay.
Not hard facts.
I think evidence-based also leaves more room for like, because we've talked about in the past with useful fictions and things like that. If something works,
do it.
If when you have your student, I don't know what example I was going to give for that, but
well, for example, an old adage of the this is an old singing idea. Okay. The vowels are produced at the vocal folds.
If that works for you, you are singing, your students singing, then like, good. I'm glad. Use it.
You know, your if you imagine sound emanating from your knees.
Well, or yeah, all the time I'll tell people, like my students, like, hey, could you imagine this like coming out of your forehead? Like if your mouth was in your head, and obviously it's not. But it works.
Exactly.
I had this thought a second ago, which might be something of a rabbit trail. Out of curiosity, we talk about useful fictions and how helpful they can be. But do you ever have a moment like when you're using those, when you're teaching students specifically that are training to also become singing teachers, do you find yourself like wanting to then explain how that works so that, like, when do you remove that illusion just for their knowledge as far as like...
Yes.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna address this as a 2-3 part answer. Part one.
Okay.
When I'm teaching a singer in front of me, I'm very much about, I could care less if they know a thing about how the voice... I mean, like, I want them to have functional skills which they can call upon in the moment of performance.
So, like, they understand how they use their voice. That's how I'll word that.
And how they can recall that thing that worked for them in a practice room or a lesson on stage.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
Because in the end, with a singer in front of us,
what
we care about is it working in the audition, on the stage, in the performance,
absolutely,
with the orchestra, blah, 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 right?
Yep.
Okay. Now, that being said, even with my singers, I prefer giving you all a structural framework that you're not guessing at your voice.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, like, you know, through voice function, we want to build a reliable average.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yes.
That your average day, not your day you feel
not
like,
the very
not,
best.
Not the day that you feel like you could sing, you know, phrases as long as Montserrat Caballé.
Sure.
But the day that you feel Tuesday.
That's honestly a groundbreaking, like, mental shift that I slowly have come to, of just when you go into an audition, like, if you, it needs to be your average. And your average, you want to be really good. But don't go in there expecting to do something that you've only been able to do once before.
Right, which is why you should very carefully consider what your audition repertoire is.
Yes, yes, but that's...
You do not need to audition with the hardest thing that you sing.
Yeah, yeah. And that's me going off on another...
But. Okay, going back to my part answer of how much do I want my teachers in training to know. Mm-hmm. Okay.
A lot of times they are also singers.
Yes. Let's talk about undergraduates.
Sure.
Who are very much still finding their own technique.
Mm-hmm.
Who are exploring their own voices.
Mm-hmm.
I want the undergrads to have the thing that I'm willing to break right away.
Uh-huh.
Is how they listen.
Okay.
Yeah. I am willing to break your brain and break your ears of mm-hmm. how you perceive noises immediately.
I'm all about that. Yeah, I'm with you.
Because as soon as you start listening to voices and breaking a singing voice down into pitch, tone, color, and buzz,
mm-hmm.
that purity, a muddy vowel, and buzz.
Mm-hmm.
And you start framing how you listen to a singer of do I hear buzz? Do I need buzz? Do I hear purity? Do I need purity?
Mm-hmm.
Is the vowel weird and phasey? Is the vowel locking it?
Yeah.
As soon as you start perceptually listening to voices through that framework, rather than guessing at what you're listening to. For example, let me give you a real world example. Don't come at me for using a classical example, Vocal Fam. I'm going to use a classical singing example. I'm sorry.
I think we'll get over it.
If you listen to Giuseppe Giacomini's voice, one of the great dramatic tenors of the 20th century, if you listen to his voice, almost everyone in the world would qualify that as a dark, timbred tenor voice.
Okay.
All I hear in that voice is buzz. Okay. All I hear is high frequency distortion.
Okay.
Because his singer's format cluster is so strong
mm-hmm.
that all I hear is the brightness. And I hear that because of the way I listen to voices now. Like, it took my grad class offhand this semester because I was like, the very first thing that I listen for in a classical singing voice,
mm-hmm.
well, depending on the voice, is listening for, do I hear buzz when I want to hear buzz and where I need to hear buzz?
Yeah, okay.
If I'm listening to a baritone and I don't hear that, I know that there's something functionally wrong immediately.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Whereas if I'm listening to a high soprano sing De Vieni Non Tardar,
you might not expect.
And if I don't hear purity right away,
mm-hmm.
I know that there's something wrong.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you.
Like, if I am listening to someone sing De Vieni Non Tardar, or let's say let's use a different example. If I'm listening to someone sing Adele Easy on Me.
Ah, yes.
And I am not hearing buzz even when
mm-hmm.
there's a vowel structure that would give me a lot of head voicey purity.
Well, I was wondering, because Easy on Me in particular.
Right. But if I'm also not hearing buzz to balance out all those moments to still give it the quality that I would expect in Adele.
From
that kind of singing.
Sure.
Then I know that there's an imbalance happening.
Yeah. Okay.
Or if I'm listening to someone, a student, sing Adele and I don't hear the flips into more purity balance when you flip up, particularly on E and U vowels.
Yes.
And so you're using the acoustic registration events to enhance these kind of
things.
But anyway, so with undergrads, the thing that I'm immediately willing to break them, their brain on,
is
the way they listen.
I'm with you.
After that, I really love giving them exercises to build voice function.
Okay.
Am I concerned with undergraduates understanding every mechanistic and acoustical thing that happens?
Yeah.
Not necessarily.
Okay.
Because what I'd really like to get across to undergrads is the basics of how a voice produces noise.
Mm-hmm.
How to listen.
Mm-hmm.
And exercises to build voice function.
Yeah, that fits.
Graduate level pedagogy.
Mm-hmm.
I want them to start to have a better awareness of frequencies that would give you a better framework for working acoustic registration.
Okay.
Understanding frequencies of vocal tract resonances.
Yeah.
Understanding our listening model. Like if they haven't had undergrad ped with me.
True. Yes.
I want them to understand our objective perceptual frameworks, of mm-hmm. course, because I even want them to understand from an objective perceptual and kinesthetic somatosensory framework
mm-hmm.
how these things are feeling or might feel.
Yeah.
How they're working from the more mechanistic and acoustic place.
Okay.
And so with the grads, I...
Even more in their lessons.
Yeah, because if I'm training... If we're talking about a doctoral student, I want them to be ready to, you know, to take my job.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know... And so,
yeah, you know, you're sending them out
to do the thing. But even the undergrads were sending out to do a thing.
Sure.
And so, because one of the things that I just think we have gotten way too far away from is that voice teaching is a trade.
Yeah.
It is a means of making money.
Gotta have it.
Above all other things. And so when I first have someone, I'm not as concerned about like breaking their world about how they sing.
Yeah.
And their understanding of their own voice.
Yeah.
Now, if you're a doctoral student,
then
let's have some real conversations about what you're experiencing, what you're doing, and why. Because the things that enhanced my teaching over the years
mm-hmm.
were the times when I had to allow my own singing ideas to be challenged.
I like it. Yeah.
Those were my moments of growth as a singing teacher. Like my moments of growth as a singing teacher were when I allowed for my own singing ideals mm-hmm. to be challenged. And then even better when I allowed for my own teaching ideals
to be challenged. Sure.
Because I don't think any of us grow from living in a bubble.
We're just being comfy.
Correct.
Comfy's nice, don't get me wrong. But
comfy is nice.
It you can stagnate there.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so like would I encourage now look, we always also have to be wary with our pedagogy training.
Mm-hmm.
Of anybody falling into like classic Dunning-Kruger, like when you first learn a thing, you think you know everything about it.
Yes.
But you actually know very little about it.
And then the more you learn, you're like...
The more you learn about it...
You realize, oh, good heavens.
The less you think you understand. And so, like, there's always that classic, like, I just came out of pedagogy class and I'm teaching for the first time. And you need to slow down your second vocal tract resonance so it can better incorporate into a third reflection. Never say that to a student. I'm begging you. Never say those words to a student.
Yeah, yeah.
If you want to say those words to me, fine.
Even then.
Even then, if you're giving me a lesson, please don't say, well, maybe to me. That's fine. And I'll be, but even then, like, there's got to be another way to say the thing to get...
Maybe it's a little more concise, if nothing else.
To let a human do a thing, right?
Yeah, there's something to be said for
which could be as simple as, could you round your lips a little bit more?
Right. Right, well, there's also something to be said like...
Or just sing a little more O in that vowel.
Yes, like...
Mind blown.
There's a reason that we... use words the way we do, the way we use the illusions that we do.
Yeah.
Because they're effective and sometimes straighter to the point. And when you only have potentially 30 minutes with a student, got to get to the point.
And who, let's admit, can we just have a real moment of like truthfulness amongst ourselves for a second, Vocal Fam?
Sure.
Our students at all levels, this is not a criticism, this is a reality.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care if you teach at Juilliard or if you teach at CU Boulder or if you teach at Mississippi College or if you teach at Davenport Academy K-12 school.
Okay.
Large and in part, the musical skill level that we're seeing singers come in to lessons with is lower than it was 50 to 80 years ago. People are not reading sheet music as much.
Oh, no.
They're not being forced to sight read. They're not people, not as many people are taking piano lessons as children and youth. Not as many people are in band or orchestra. And choirs are not as adamant about sight reading. I'm not saying that no one is, but I'm just saying that across the board, general musicianship levels are lower. I don't need to see any statistics to know this. I don't need to. I'm just living life in the culture. And I have seen that musicianship levels are lower. And so one of the things that we're combating in lessons is just the fact that we're having to help students remedial musical skills.
Yes. Yes. I mean, I would say the vast majority of my students do not read music.
And you're at a university.
Yes. Now, granted, I teach a lot of elective students, but even my students that are majors, a lot of them
don't read music.
Yeah, maybe not yet.
Read music.
But even then, like, how well are they going to learn to read music in their two semesters
of theory
and maybe some group piano, particularly if they don't see the value of it?
It is a real... I'm just saying this as a reality, not as a judgment or
I get it, 'cause there is so much, I think, calling for our attention. Like, there's so many things pulling at, like, students in so many directions when they're K through 12 now that everybody wants to do a sport. And maybe they're doing something musically, but that's also competing with their drama club and their science club. And that's great that there are all these opportunities, but it does result in, you know, your well-rounded student may not be highly skilled in any one particular thing.
At the same time, I would also like to say, just for a second, if you're listening to this episode and you are a music student.
Yeah.
Who's a voice principal of some, you know, I'm a BA, I'm a musical theater major, I'm a voice performance major, I don't care.
Yeah.
Music ed, music minor, whatever. Master's in music, voice performance. I don't care.
Okay.
The world does not need a musician who is non-functional.
Sure.
You are doing yourself a disservice if you believe that, like, you could... Because, like, look, when I was coming up, the generation ahead of me, there are plenty of singers of that generation who are still singing professionally right now who can't read music.
Mm.
I can think of people... I'm obviously not going to name anyone. But I can think of people... And that ain't gonna fly anymore.
Sure.
We need functional musicians. And if you're considering this field and you're considering this field for your career, please be a functional musician first. And then consider what skills you need as a singer. Because the first one that you need is to be a functional musician.
Sure.
Sorry, Aperna got soapboxy
the moon
there.
This is honestly, this episode I feel like has turned very windy and little mini soapboxes along the way, but not in a bad way.
We were talking about language.
We were. It's okay. Well, this is still language.
Reading sheet music is a language.
It absolutely is.
Singing pop harmonies is a language.
Absolutely. Lead sheet is lead sheet is a language I have had to learn. Like, because I grew up taking piano, and so I knew how to read sheet music. Could not play a lead sheet. You know, in undergrad, got the basics, was taught, like, how it works. Like, obviously, you know how it works, its chords. But that does not translate to really playing from lead sheet.
Right.
And when you teach a bunch of worship leadership majors... You gotta learn how to read some lead sheet.
Well, and with all of like, and listen, I think that singing, you know, contemporary harmonies in a pop song, rock song, country song, mm-hmm. R&B song, insert style here, is a very important skill for a lot of singers to have. And because sure. You gotta know what your over harmony is and what your under harmony is.
Sure.
You know, depending on what the melody is doing, because basically most of those styles you're talking about three parts, you're not talking about four parts, because
no,
typically
not really.
A fourth part would be the melody an octave down,
yeah,
or potentially the melody an octave up, depending exactly where the melody sits.
Sure.
But you know, and that's a functional skill to me. That's part of the skill set that I'm talking about, like,
yeah,
just being a functional musician first. Oh my goodness gracious. Anyway, sorry, this was kind of windy.
It kind of was, but it does in a sense come back, because you know, we talk about like how you're interacting with your students, and like I think just communication period really comes back to language, our word choices, when it's appropriate to use a more potentially, what's the word I'm looking for, scientific isn't the word I want to use, but a more kind of a more literal definition, uh-huh. versus a more experienced
symbology,
subjective,
you know,
yeah, feelsy,
yeah, whatever.
Yeah,
I mean, and in that regard, like, you know, what we were just saying too, I mean, even communicating musically is its own language.
Absolutely.
Because, like, if you work with a band, like, they're just going to be calling out Nashville numbers. They're just going to be calling out 1, 4, 6.
Sure.
You know, 2, 7. Like, whatever.
Sure.
I mean, that's just what... That in and of itself is its own language. You know, we don't have to all be... It's the German 6-5 over the...
Gosh, I hadn't thought about that one in a while. And by in a while, I mean since the last time I was in school.
You know, good old harmonic analysis.
Sure.
Oh, what are we doing?
What are we doing?
Anyway, to transition to wrap this up, a couple of things. We watched The Marvels this week.
Did you?
Have you seen it?
No, all I can manage is 10 minutes at a time,
Well, that's a movie you could watch 10 minutes at a time.
Fabulous.
There are zero stakes.
It also might be one that I could watch with her. It's funny. It just really depends. Like, some things you can have on the background and they don't faze him, and some things he just gets...
There's a musical number?
Well, now I have to.
Like a Bollywood-esque dance sing-along
number? A lot of what I've been seeing recently about the Marvels was that people felt like it got a bad rap.
I mean, Charlie, my kids loved it.
Everyone I've heard is like, I think it, you know, it got a bad rap while it was in theaters and people were super whatever. But then everyone who's seen it seems to have really enjoyed it. So I'm sure I'll watch it. I mean, especially now that it's streaming, that makes my life a lot easier.
Like, I think that it's the best example of if superhero fatigue is real, and it probably mm-hmm. is, that movie suffered from because superhero fatigue.
I totally believe it. On a separate note, you want to know what Jamie and I are going to try really hard to go see, not this weekend, but next weekend?
Dune?
Yes.
Yeah, I would really like to go with you.
Yeah, you should. We're going to try to go next weekend is our goal.
I would really like to see it because apparently it is like...
I've heard it's phenomenal.
Villeneuve's like magnum opus.
I have heard it is phenomenal. Just yes, I've heard it's great, and that specifically too that it's one you want to see in theaters.
No popcorn buckets.
Nope. Ooh, I kept hearing about the popcorn buckets, but I hadn't seen any pictures. And then when I finally did, I was just like, "What? Nope. I don't like it."
You don't.
Don't get the popcorn bucket.
Don't do a Google search on the Dune popcorn.
No.
Please, Vocal Fam.
Don't do it.
We're just recommending against that.
I want to see it. I know Jamie wants to see it even more than I do because he's read the books the whole way.
I feel like I need to rewatch the first one.
I do too, because that was like, I feel like that was a fever dream almost for me.
We watched it together.
Yes, at your old house.
I slept through like an hour of it.
Yes, you did. I think I have a picture of you and your wife both asleep.
And now what I'm struggling with
mm-hmm.
is in order to rewatch the first and watch the second, that's a 6.5 hour
it's a
long
commitment. I probably will not be watching the first before going to it, given that, again, 10 minutes at a time, friends.
I've got taxes to do.
I might read the synopsis of the first one. That's my usual go-to.
Maybe I could do that.
Yeah, go to the wiki page.
Like, I remember that Zendaya is Chani. Not,
she's only in it for a few minutes in the first one.
I remember that, you know, Willy Wonka is Paul Atreides. Like, yeah. I remember that Josh Brolin's character... Is Josh Brolin's character?
Is Josh Brolin's character?
I remember that
Oscar
Drax
Isaac's
is
in
it.
Oscar Isaac, also in
Poe
it.
Poe Dameron is in it.
Jessica Chastain, like I remember who's in it.
There's
some big worm things.
I love Rebecca Ferguson, so I mean, you know, anything with Rebecca Ferguson has my vote. But I don't.
The specifics
and
allude
I've
to
seen
a little.
The 1980s Dune. So,
not.
Like, I am roughly familiar with the overarching story and plot.
Sure.
But, like, do I remember the Dune that we watched at my house?
Probably not. I'm telling you, fever dream.
The thing that I do remember about it
okay.
was thinking, in the last 30 minutes, oh, this movie finally got interesting, and then it ended.
And then it ended. But that, honestly, that's kind of how the book is. Like, talk about a long, windy intro. It made me feel... Well, I haven't gotten very far into these just because of life in general. But Jamie and I had started reading the Wheel of Time series.
Oh,
you want to talk
wolf.
About some
now,
long intros?
We've seen all the TV
we
show.
We haven't watched the TV show, but we've been trying to read. Well, Jamie's almost read all the books. I, not so much.
That's a commitment.
It is a commitment. I didn't real. Yeah, yeah. He hands me the first one. He gets me to read it and love it. And then he's like, great, there are like 14 more. And I'm like, what? Because it's
not
like they're short.
Not two. There's not two more.
No.
There's like 14 or something.
There's
like
so
that.
Many. Yeah. There's so many. And they're long.
I remember a friend
long.
Like last summer or the summer before posting like how accomplished they felt because they had finished
read them.
The last one.
And when Jamie finishes them all, I think he will feel accomplished. I will eventually. It's just that I need, if I read things, it needs to be something like that I can read in ebook form and... This is not that. But yeah. Anyway, Dune 2. I want to go see it. I'd like to see it. I want to see it. We're going to try to... Everything takes a lot of planning.
Any Oscars prediction upsets? Or you think it's going to just be an Oppenheimer sweep?
Oh... Sure, probably.
Not for actresses.
Not for actresses. I think that Emma Stone might get actress for that Poor Things. Yeah.
I think that's pretty much a lot.
I feel like I'm Just Ken might get the song.
There is a lot of recent buzz that I've heard in the last week.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That Barbie will win Best Picture.
That would be wild.
That Oppenheimer will win all the other awards that it's
been
winning.
But that Barbie gets
like
Best Picture.
Chris will get Best Director.
Sure.
RDJ at this point seems like a shoe-in.
Yeah.
Killian is definitely also going to win Best Actor.
Yeah.
Neither of the women will win because I'm pretty certain that Chris Nolan cannot write a female character.
Well, that's not wrong.
It'll probably win Adapted Screenplay.
Yeah.
But I've heard multiple industry people in the last week talk about how Barbie is going to upset and win only Best Picture.
I could maybe see that.
And they based that off of the fact that sometimes the thing that ends up winning Best Picture gets a Best Director snub. And she did not get nominated.
Yeah, because I remember all that when it happened. Yeah, and to be honest, I just haven't been like enough on the movie scene this year to even know what else is in the running.
Interesting.
I figure if we're being honest, everything outside of Oppenheimer and Barbie, like, does it even matter?
I still want to see The Holdovers because I didn't get a chance to see it when it was in the theaters.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to see that because I love Paul Giamatti and
I saw who was it?
And I want to see American Fiction. I haven't gotten a chance to see American Fiction.
What is the one about? Was it about Bernstein? The one that like...
Maestro.
Yeah, that the actor, like... I don't know. I've heard a lot of memes about him and the method acting he went through.
I think that is the perfect example of Oscar bait.
Yes. That's what I've seen lots of memes about that and about how you have these actors that go method just to try to get an Oscar, which
I think...
Whatever. I haven't seen that movie. I have no idea if it's good or not. I've seen the memes.
I think almost everyone was disappointed in the overarching storytelling of that.
Ah. Good to know.
Movie.
Good to know.
Because I think people wanted it to be more about Bernstein, his composition, how his music was made, this, that, and the other. And that movie was pretty much just about the two relationships in his life and their cognitive dissonance.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't know. That's about as much as I know about the Oscars, so I'll be interested to see.
I mean, if Oppenheimer just basically sweeps, then it's probably the most boring Oscar year ever in history.
I don't know. Someone could slap someone.
Oh, Lord. Let's hope that doesn't happen. I had forgotten about that.
I didn't.
Was that a year ago, 2 years ago? It was 2 years ago,
maybe
wasn't
2 years ago?
I don't know.
Time has literally no meaning.
Yeah,
no. It's all
meaning.
A weird blur and
whatsoever.
I'm here.
Yeah, that's right. All right, Vocal Fam, we're going to come back probably in 2 weeks.
Yes, because next week is spring break. Woohoo!
So we'll be back in 2 weeks.
See you then.
Looking forward to it.
Hope things are going well.
I also hope things are going well.
Yeah.
Remember, it's tax season.
Yeah, I got to find all those documents and make Jamie do our taxes.
Start to get your taxes prepared if you've not yet.
Dreadful. Don't like taxes.
April, whatever the actual date is this year, depending on how the weekend falls, is coming.
Going to go cash in on Henry. Get that.
Your first year.
Yeah.
He was born last year, right?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. So we also get, apparently there's some like, if you had a kid
child
last year.
Tax credit.
Yep.
Yes.
Woo, cashing in. So good times.
That's a definite tax break.
Yep.
Fantastic. Yep.
We're ready for it.
It is just to be clear, that does not make up for the cost of having a
child. No, not at all. Not at all.
In case anybody out there is like, oh, but maybe if I had a kid, my cash flow would be higher.
No.
No.
Kids cost a lot. I mean, and he's a baby, and I feel like he's probably about as low cost as he'll ever be right now.
You think when they're that age, it's like, oh, if I could just get them out of formula, or if I just get them out of diapers, or if I could just get them out of diapers.
X. Yeah. And but no, I know it's going to get more expensive because he's going to want to do things. And in my case, he's going to start eating actual food. Like right now, we feed me, he's fed. We're good. But eventually that's going to end.
Yep.
And then he's going to be like his dad. He's going to eat a bunch and it's just going to be more expensive. I can just tell. He's already started trying to reach for like my food and my glasses of like when I'm drinking things. I'm like, stop that. Get out of here.
And then his father will introduce him to steak.
He wants that to be like his first food. And I'm like, Jamie, that can't be a baby's first food.
No, it cannot.
You'll kill him.
And then, he could like have a piece he could gnaw on.
Yeah. But I don't really want to because then he's going to want it.
Yep.
I know who his father is. Anyway,
oh,
world.
Wow. Will that be...
What an expensive world we live in.
What a thing. What a thing.
Just got to start raising a cow, I guess.
Bad for the environment, apparently.
Oh.
Anyway.
Poor cows. What did they ever do to the environment? I mean, I know. I've seen the stuff, but don't get me wrong.
I don't think a cow would be the end of the world. I think it's the... cow industry?
Sure.
Perhaps. Cows have been around for
a while.
While before they were harming the ozone layer, perhaps.
The methane.
Anyway.
Good times.
Yeah, all right, Vogel
anyway,
fam.
Anyway,
what'd you have for breakfast?
First, I had my little protein bars that I have, and then today I made some toast, and I put, it's peanut butter, but it had dark chocolate mixed in with it. Woo!
Nice.
You know, got to get a little chocolate in there somewhere.
Quality.
Yeah. It was all
right. Quality. Okay. All right, Vogel fam. We're out.
Bye.
Peace.